There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial as usual. This is podcast number 300, August 28th, 2008. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From used cars to new cars, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we always thank Yahoo Ads. Real quickly, I want to mention that this is also being videocast and will be brought to you on YouTube, sponsored by Lipton Tea. Sipping good. So there you have it, and we're going to have on today's program, Massa, is he number one? Quick Nick gets a warning. Kaz says he's very, very sorry. Valencia, formula boring? And of course, we have an AJ Foyt interview only available on the podcast. Check it out when you go to the F1Weekly.com website. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. First of all, gentlemen, welcome to the F1Weekly.com video studio. Steven, Nasser, how are you guys today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely outstanding. Nas, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Greetings and video regards to all the listeners, and I would like to thank them for their continued support.
Of course, and that's why we're doing this special 300th podcast, somewhat of an anniversary, a lot of work. But we thought we'd bring you a video of how ridiculous we really look when we're doing the podcast. So there you go. Punishment for you and a few laughs for us. But let's get right to it. Let's talk about Valencia. Some people thought it was boring. Luckily for us, we had David Coulthard hitting people, at least one person. And, of course, the big story for me was qualifying. And Renault not making it out of Q2. So let's quickly go to Steve Faub, my co-host. Steve, your thoughts on qualifying and the failure of Flavio to lead the French team to Q3.
It was an interesting qualification, brand new track, long track. Seemed that everybody was having a bit of trouble. It was interesting that both Renaults got out of Q1 but couldn't get out of Q2. Which really kind of surprised me, because when both Nelsinho and Fernando were able to clear the first qualification, I seriously expected at least one of the two of them to get in to Q3. But for some reason, they just couldn't find any pace in that second session. Nelsinho, 2/10 behind Timo Glock or Mark Webber in his Red Bull. And then Fernando couldn't even outrun Nakajima, which may have boded ill for him later on in the race. Quick recap of quali, because we did not do our typical race recap this weekend, so we're going to do a quick recap of that, and we'll do quali as we have been. Out in the first round, the usual suspects of Adrian Sutil, Rubens Barrichello, Giancarlo Fisichella, David Coulthard, and Jenson Button. Coulthard's been having a lot of trouble getting out of that first session lately. In the second session, out are Piquet, Webber, Glock, Alonso, and Nakajima. Both STRs make it to the final session, which was a little bit surprising. For some reason.
And let's not forget that the story of the weekend, when we look at the practices, the qualifying, and the race, was really Sebastian Vettel. He did outstanding. And really, the Ferrari-powered cars, including Forza India, Adrian Sutil's, were all the fastest cars through the speed trap. And Renault's got to do some homework here. I don't care if they start cheating, but something has to be done. Ness, you've got any thoughts on this?
I have
this?
A question.
Question?
Why is Ferrari running one car in qualifying, if you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I don't know what's going on with Ferrari.
It's pathetic.
It is pathetic, but we'll talk about that later on. Go ahead and give us the rest of the news.
And now into the final session, Felipe Massa gets his fourth pole, fifth if you're Felipe Massa. Lewis Hamilton gets P2, Robert Kubica, Kimi Räikkönen, Heikki Kovalainen, Sebastian Vettel, Yarno Trulli, Nick Heidfeld, Nico Rosberg, and Sebastian Bourdais. Big surprise with the two SDRs. You know, I'm sure that the SDRs went with one light car and one heavy car, Sebastian Bourdais drawing that short straw.
Yeah.
But still, for the SDR to out-qualify both Toyotas and, you know, at least Nick got into the final qualifying sessions for the first time in quite some time.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Nick later on, but still, very disappointing qualifying for myself, watching two Toro Rossos, one driven by, you know, our wonderful friend from France, Sebastian Bourdais, and of course Vettel doing an outstanding job. Obviously the driver for RBR next year, and I believe he may be bumped up into service later on this season, maybe telling David Coulthard early retirement could be a good retirement for you, David.
Well, if nothing else, the mechanics are going to have some saying that he keeps wrecking the car at every race.
Well, he's just got a problem with some of those Force India cars occasionally. At least it wasn't his own teammate this time.
Yeah, that's
but nevertheless, very disappointing for myself and of course for Flavio, and no bravos this weekend from me. Not even a couple of shiboshes.
Well, maybe for the Force India drivers.
Yeah, sure. Maybe for Force India, but not even that. I'm going to have to come up with a Toro Rosso. Maybe something in German. How do you say bravo in German?
I don't know. The only thing I know in German is Gesundheit, which Gesundheit? They don't have these days.
Really? I know Raust and Schumacher.
There you go.
Exactly. Anyway, so let's go to the race now that I'm super disappointed. And this is one of the reasons why Fernando Alonso doesn't like being in mid-pack, because somebody can hit you.
Yeah, then it often happens in the first or second lap. Poor Kaz manages to get up behind him at one point in the track, and something I haven't seen in a while. He just knocked his rear wing clean off.
Well, Kaz Nakajima has been having a decent season, but it was just a bad start on him because Fernando had people in front of him, and it was basically a racing incident. He was sorry about it. But let's briefly talk about the Valencia track. No, this has been really hyped up.
Well, it's a beautiful track.
It's a beautiful
venue.
Some people whined about it because some of the camera angles were a little industrial, they said. But I thought it was pretty nice. The width was good.
You've got it on a waterfront, you know. You get the beach on one side, and you get the warehouses on the other.
And it was continuously mentioned during the broadcast that it reminded them of Long Beach in the 80s.
Very true.
Very true.
Well, I saw the practice on Friday morning, and when I saw that blue sea, Mediterranean, and cruise ships there.
The tiers?
Yeah, no, not the tiers. Wow, this is pretty impressive.
It looked good.
And this, I think, is the future of Formula One. You know, motor racing started with round the houses races and street races in Europe, and now they have Abu Dhabi coming, Singapore, and that bridge, crossing the bridge, was way too cool.
It was way too cool, but I think the good weather is going to hamper the excitement of the race, and I think next year it should be scheduled during the rainy season, maybe the monsoon season. We've got to get some excitement at this track.
Well, maybe put it up in the spring instead of the late summer and get some spring rains. There was a couple points there where we thought we were going to get rain.
I was hoping.
But it never really materialized. We have a couple of drops on the cameras during quali, and everybody's like, oh, rain. But it was really almost on only one end of the track and never really played into anything that went on.
Exactly.
They've changed the name already for next year.
Mediterranean Grand Prix.
Yes, sir.
How fashionable.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the couscous will be half price.
Oh, does that mean they can charge like another $15 a ticket?
Oh, probably. I don't know. But by lap three, Hamilton was setting fast lap. He was pretty excited. But you know, the Massa does another outstanding job. And he started knocking down the fast laps at this beginning of this race.
Well, up until the first pit stop, they were pretty much trading fast laps back and forth the entire time.
But eventually, Massa owned the fast lap and ended with the fast lap on this race.
Yeah, and he ends up with the hat trick, as they say.
And I'm And I'm no Felipe Massa fan by any stretch of the imagination, but he certainly did an outstanding job. And I hate to say this, but when it comes to Ferrari, will Ferrari make him number one till the end of the season? Because we're past half the halfway mark. Kimi has got 55 points.
Well, you know, if the Hungarian Grand Prix was two laps shorter, he would have gone two races in a row. So this is a tremendous job. And like you, I'm not a big Massa fan, but you know, I don't diss anybody, or I'm not going to lose sleep if he wins the championship. But things are looking very good for him. You know, today in practice in Monza, he was fastest, or in testing, I should say. So, and good news for all the Massanets, you know, all these people who want me to eat a crow.
Yeah.
That crow has taken off from Sao Paulo's Congonhas International
Airport. And I heard his flight is on time.
Yeah, he's coming nonstop directly to San Francisco, and I hear he's traveling business class, so he'll be well rested and very tasty.
Not only that, but he's expecting a clean white Camry.
Yeah.
So keep up the good work. Now, let's quickly go to lap 15. This is where Massa pits, and Hamilton takes the lead of the race. But Hamilton pits on the following lap. I thought, wow, maybe he's going to have a few laps in the bag, but sure, he didn't. And the big news for me was when Massa came out of the pits, he comes out in front of Kimi Raikkonen. Full tank. Raikkonen does not have a full tank. You would think that Ferrari either would tell Massa, let Raikkonen by because he needs to put in some good laps, or Raikkonen would just get by on skill. That didn't happen, NASCAR.
Especially considering, you know, Massa's out in a pig. He's full of gas, which means he's going to be at least a half a second slower. You would think that Raikkonen could have gotten him at least on speed alone, but never really even challenges him.
No. And Raikkonen, once again, is in one of those slumps. I call it the Heidfeld slump.
Well, you know, he has not won a race since April.
Okay,
which is a long time ago. And Massa now has twice as many wins as Raikkonen. Who would have thought that? And I, you know, I was at Sears Point Infineon Raceway over the weekend, and I ran into Harden Genli, the ex-Grand Prix driver from New Zealand. And he asked me, what do you make of Kimi Raikkonen this season? And I said, you know, at $25 million, Jenson Button is the highest paid driver based on performance of this year. And I said, at $50 million a year, Kimi Raikkonen is the highest paid number two driver. And he said, oh, he's making that kind of money? I says, yeah. And he just could not believe that F1 drivers these days are making this kind of money. $50 million for this kind of performance, it's way beyond pathetic. And, you know, if you have a problem like he did in France or maybe won another race, but not to have a win since Spain, that's very bad.
I know, but the only thing I do like about Kimi Raikkonen, he doesn't come up with excuses.
Yeah, very true.
Oh, I was blocked in qualifying.
Yeah, very true.
Oh, you know, the setup of the car, the team screwed me up. He never does that.
Well, he never says anything.
Nick Heidfeld always has somebody blocking him in qualifying. And, you know, maybe he does. But, you know, I certainly don't want to go back on the Nick Heidfeld bashing, which I did a few weeks ago.
But, you know, the thing about Raikkonen, he does have the renaissance factor. He can come back. This is still the guy.
It's true.
That was 26 points down, 17 points down, two races to go. But now you have to question. You know, to me, this looks like the Scheckter syndrome of 1980. Jody Scheckter, you know.
Mm, exactly. His lost interests.
Yeah, his background was Raikkonen. He came from nothing, won the championships in 79, and then in 80, just even though he did not have a competitive car, but, you know, the fire, the desire was there. And he says this himself.
And not only that, but see, when the man who replaced Michael Schumacher begins to not show the interest, the scenario with showing up in the Alpine Stars suit instead of the Puma suit, you begin to develop a chill in the paddock.
Yeah.
And the team behind you is going to have issues with you. And if Montezemolo has issues with you,
yeah,
it's not going to be a happy, happy family in there.
Wearing an Alpine Star to Ferrari team paddock area is like you coming here in a NASCAR t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, or a number 8 T-shirt.
Yeah, that's very true. You know,
it number 8.
That's Fernando's number, though.
Who?
No, Fernando. Oh. Yeah, he was a world champion a few years ago.
He was.
Yeah.
Till he ran into a rookie.
Oh boy! You know, I was going to bring that drummer over just for that specific.
Move on.
Okay, let's move on. Lap 24. Massa's lead is up to 5.1 seconds. Impressive, and he's doing an outstanding job. And this is where the race really gets boring for me, guys. I'm sorry, but I started playing pinochle.
Well, there wasn't much passing. There really weren't
passing.
There weren't even any really good trains this week, as we typically would see behind Jenson Button or Rubens Barrichello. So it's just kind of one car at a time. You know, it's like watching slot cars, and more so than usual.
Okay, now the excitement does come up lap 38 when Massa is released in the pits, and he's being apparently it was sort of an unsafe release, and now he's being investigated. He's in the lead, and the investigation and what we call here at F1 Weekly the FIA conspiracy begins, and it reminded me of. I don't know. I thought it wasn't a big deal, but since the race really had no excitement, the excitement was in the pits.
Well, you know, they mentioned on the Speed TV broadcast, similar thing happened in GP2 race when Indian driver Karun Chandra cut in front of somebody.
And exactly.
And I saw that, pass, I mean, the move again and again. And sure enough, he just cuts in front of him, and Massa did not do that.
No, he slowed down for Sutil. No advantage gained. So I think the penalty was fair, which we will talk about later. But the only other action was, of course, the bad luck of Kimi Raikkonen in the pits on lap 43. Kimi Raikkonen and Heikki Kovalainen pit together. And once again, Raikkonen's miserable weekend continues because he pulls away with the fuel rig still in the car, which is unusual for Kimi Raikkonen. Very unusual.
And they showed that video where the light was still red when he...
Exactly. Lights never changed.
Exactly. So first they blamed Ferrari, the automated pit stop, you know, that's crazy. But in the end, it was Kimi Raikkonen's fault.
They were partly blaming that because they had had a report that had been deactivated after Massa's pit for some reason, that it was malfunctioning or something to that regard. And you watch the videotape and it never changes and he starts to pull away, takes one of his... fuel riggers with him. Basically, the guy smacks himself on a tire and ends up having to be taken away on a stretcher.
Yeah, but he was okay.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, he was.
And sure enough, it's just sometimes I try to understand what is going on in Kimi Raikkonen's mind, and nobody can.
No, he hardly says anything, so you're not going to figure it out. And then, you know, the engine failing, that provided him a smoke screen for his lackluster performance.
Exactly. And, of course... on lap 46, Kimi Raikkonen's engine blows. I mean, what? It's a sad state of affairs, especially at such a great track. You know, everybody's hyping it up, even though I thought it was a boring race, and I can't wait for Spa.
Well, you know, previous race was Massa having an engine failure. Now it's Raikkonen, and what goes around comes around.
Exactly.
Guess who's on eggshells now?
Oh, my God. Massa?
No, the guy who might be... Oh, Hamilton.
Yeah. Hamilton's going to the DNF Chapel this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, but let's talk about Hamilton. A lot more maturity. He's talking about, you know I need to just get the points, not worry about winning every race, you know, because sometimes he was just so focused on that, he would make too many mistakes.
He needs to watch the first few laps of the Brazilian Grand Prix last year when he tried to make that move on Alonso.
On Fernando.
Yeah, that was
the
dumb move of the
decade. It was the dumbest.
Decade.
He could have won the championship.
Dumb move of the decade.
Trying to compete on bald tires in wet conditions.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it looks like Hamilton is learned his lesson. A good second for him. Got his 8 points. He's still in the lead in the championship.
You know, the amazing thing is he has again increased his lead like last previous race also. You know, he had not a good race, but because Massa dropped out, so he increased his lead. After this race, he increases by 1 point. The second place guy has changed.
Exactly.
So he's been very lucky last two races.
Oh, I agree. So now Massa is 6 points behind Hamilton in the Drivers' Championship with 64 points. Raikkonen is in fourth with 57. And Kubica is still in there with 55 points. Has a shot if everybody really starts crumbling.
Yeah, he kind of needs the guys at the top to kind of fade. Ferrari seems to be trying to get a little too much out of their motors lately, so maybe that could come to his benefit. I understand that Hamilton wasn't actually feeling his best at this race, something about a neck injury.
Yeah.
And there were also a couple of drivers, there were issues with a flu bug going through the paddock.
Those excuses, Stephen.
Well, of course, they usually are. But again, even if he was not feeling well, he still ran a really good race. Finishing over 35 seconds or 32 seconds ahead of Robert Kubica in third. Good to see BMW kind of get back at the top of the charts again. They've been kind of absent for since Canada, really. And so good to see them getting back into the race.
And speaking of BMW, let's just quickly mention, let me get my notes here. Robert Kubica signed for 1 year. Now, Robert did not want a three-year deal like Mario Tyson wanted. I think Robert was talking to Fernando, and Fernando said, stick with the one-year deal, dude. That way you could get into Ferrari, maybe.
No, I don't think he will ever give that advice. He may give that advice to Fisichella.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, or Sakon Yamamoto.
Yeah, one of my favorites. Yeah. No, but I found that interesting. Kubica did not want to sign. He didn't want to be tied down. He wants to be a free agent in 2010, whatever that means. But I thought the big, big news, and I don't think it's going to be very good for his mental attitude, was Kubica getting signed and Nick Heidfeld getting warned.
Yeah, you know, these things, you make the decisions in the environment and the facts you have. It could be a very good decision, especially if the BMW package does not get, you know, very strong next season. But then again, you know, having a one-year contract, if somebody like a Grosjean or a Bruno Senna really starts doing very well this season, then, you know, Dr. Tyson may get him on board as the lead guy.
Exactly. Also, there's some talk about Takuma Sato going to Toro Rosso, which I don't believe is going to happen because there's just too much young talent, as you just said.
No, but you know, money talks, and they need a lot of money. And
if they bring an F1 driver that can bring sponsorship,
can you imagine how much money Gerhard Berger will save if Honda gives them free engines, like Toyota is giving to Williams?
Yeah, but the Toro Rosso is just performing so well with the Ferrari motor.
But they're paying for it also, you know.
Oh, big time. But they can afford it at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah, but if Berger could get free motors, because we know that Dietrich isn't ponying up nearly as much money as he was, and also he could use that money for development, because that's the other issue that they've got with the change in the rules. They've kind of been hung out to dry on doing their own development, whereas before they were kind of being able to ride on RBR's coattails.
Very true, and I was really surprised to hear that Buemi has a very possible chance. And it's not because his first name is Sebastian to get possibly a test for Toro Rosso. I still think he's way too inconsistent to be in Formula One.
The kid is quick. He's only 19 years old. I think he needs another year in testing or GP2. But, you know.
Or both.
Yeah, or both. And but, you know, if the management likes you, which they do, and he's one of their drivers, they might just put him in the car.
Okay, real quickly, do you think Bourdais will be around in 2009, gentlemen?
Around in Formula One?
Yes, Formula One.
I would be surprised. I hope he is, but I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I hope he is too, but...
I hope he is too. You know, he's a guy that if for some reason STR drops him, he would be a good pickup for somebody like Force India to get.
No, I agree. And are you guys looking forward to Spa?
Of course.
I think Spa is sort of cool.
Well, I think this is where my feeling is pendulum will shift in Ferrari's favor. Spa, Monza, the fast tracks.
Well, Ferrari's been doing well. It's their number two driver. I mean, their number one driver that's not doing so well.
They have two drivers?
Yeah, that, you know, the guy that replaced Michael Schumacher, yeah, that famous German guy.
1A. 1A's not running so well.
Exactly. So anyway, you know what? We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial, and I want to remind the listeners, you'll be able to catch this episode of F1 Weekly, the 300th anniversary. We've been around for 300 years. And, of course, on the AJ4 interview, a special for you guys, the listeners, you got to go to the podcast for that. That will not be available in video because AJ did not want to sign the waiver. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Power, passion, and performance. If that's what you're after with your car, tune into the Castrol Syntech Unlock the Power podcast hosted by Funkmaster Flex at castrol.com/Syntech. For those of you who are looking to maximize your car's performance, Flex will show you how to unlock the power of racing, motor oil, and cars and music. Castrol Syntech Motor Oil provides maximum horsepower for your engine. Have you unlocked all your car's power? Unlock the power at castrol.com/Syntech.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now we go into everybody's favorite episode as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and Nasser Hamid, the king of Karachi himself. Nass, welcome back to the studio. How are you? How's the tea?
Very good, sir, as always. Thank you. And since there is no Española in Karachi schools, let me read this here. Buenos dias and carrera respetos to all the listeners. And I forgot to mention the race in Valencia was the 65th different Grand Prix circuit that has been used in Formula One.
Outstanding statistic, yes. There, Nasser. Where, yes, do you find this stuff? Give us your secret.
Man, this particular one was on another podcast. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I won't take the name.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep up the good work. Just lost a zero on his check, but that's okay because he's got a lot.
You have thick skin like me.
I know you do. But anyway, before you go into your global motorsports effort here, give us another couple of quick snippets on Kimi Raikkonen, because I know you and him have that deep affection.
Well, I do love the racer in him, and I don't think the man has forgotten how to drive a race car, just like Alonso has not forgotten or Schumi forgot in the years he did not win the championship. But, you know, I was thinking the other day, what could be the motivation for him now to win? You know, he was hustling so hard with McLaren and did a tremendous comeback job last year. He must have made over $100 million in his career. Well, over 100.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and he's living in tax-free Switzerland, so he can afford to retire on his own terms and timing, so no issues there. And I am convinced that even if he retires now, in the next 10, 15 years, we're not going to be seeing him in the drive-through of a McDonald's at Saint Moritz going, "You want fries with that?"
Yeah, no, so I agree with you completely. No, Kimi's going to be fine, and he'll probably race in other series when he retires from Formula One, but I certainly thought at the beginning of this season he was going to take this championship with maybe a little more machismo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I expected him to perform like Schumacher. I mean, you just don't replace a seven-time world champion and win on, you know, pure luck.
And once again, performing like Schumacher is not an easy task.
No. As Rubinho found out.
Oh, pobrecito. Yeah.
But, you know, all it takes is a DNF for Hamilton. He's back in action.
I agree. And we haven't seen a DNF from Hamilton. And let me tell the listeners right now, one's coming up, it's in the bag.
Yeah, and I think the next few races are going to really help Ferrari. Spa, Monza, and, you know, Fuji.
Absolutely.
And wherever they go.
I agree. So let's quickly jump into this global action here.
No. I'd like to put a smile on mankind, and I know most of our listeners will be very happy to read this. You're asking me, where do I get this kind of information?
Oh, you're going to divulge. I like
that.
Yeah,
but this is not from a podcast, so you're going to feel good here. Actually, there's an interesting story on GrandPrix.com. Now, GrandPrix.com is a very good website. They are the official supplier of database information to Formula1.com.
They are professionals.
And they have a gentleman by the name of Mike Dudson, who used to write for a different magazine, very experienced motorsports journalist. And on this website, GrandPrix.com, he does a segment called A Hack Looks Back on Every Grand Prix. So he talks about his experiences, what has happened in the years gone by. So please check out this article regarding the Spanish Grand Prix and see what Graham Hill did at a Spanish restaurant in 1967 to amuse some serious-looking Spaniards. And since this is a family show, I will not bring it up here.
Thank you, Nasser.
No pun intended. Okay, a few more thoughts on the Valencia race. As we have seen once again, Kobe cannot keep up with Hemi, just like Nelsinho can't keep up with Fernando. And talking of Nelsinho, Renault has decided to delay his confirmation of his contract till another month, and I will not be surprised if he's replaced by Romain Grosjean.
And Romain Grosjean's name has come up a number of times.
The guy is quick. He's mistake-prone. He's making a lot of mistakes. But if you can be as quick as experienced GP2 drivers in your rookie season, you got something going for you.
And I think Flavia will tolerate mistakes if you're quick.
Oh, yeah, most people will.
Exactly.
Okay, let's see what else we have. Bruno Senna, interesting, anybody see? Let's hope Larry Carter is wrong this time. Did anybody see any of the action in GP2 races?
Not only did I see it, but I taped it.
Oh, you did? Oh,
absolutely.
Thanks. How about you, Mr.
Fogg? No, I didn't get a chance.
Well, they were talking about, they were asking, Peter Windsor was asking most of the top drivers who will be the driver to go into Formula One in the next year or two. And the two names that were constantly given by most of the drivers were Grosjean and Bruno Senna. And Bruno Senna, I think, is really on his way. The name is going to help him. He's a close second in the championship. And, you know, he recently did a deal with Hilton Hotels to be their ambassador. So some people are saying that this may be a move to McLaren in the role of a test driver, because they also have a business relationship with McLaren. And I think being a test driver at McLaren will be better than a race seat at Toro Rosso or Force India or Force Paraguay.
I absolutely agree, but that would be a long shot for him to get that test.
Well, the name will certainly help. And after the hectic season is over, I think Bruno Senna would like to check in at Paris Hilton for some R&R.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. I like that.
Yeah, and talking of the GP2 race, running on empty was the case. Giorgio Pantano runs out of fuel only a few corners from the finish after dominating the feature race on Saturday in Valencia. He was still very lucky as misery loves company. Title challenger Bruno Senna also ran out of petrol.
A little Danica Patrick action there.
Yeah, exactly. Or benzina, as the natives would call it in Valencia. A lucky winner was comrade Vitaly Petrov of Russia. And Pastor Maldonado was second. He is from Venezuela. And Romain Grosjean was third after a great battle in the late stages of the race. Now, Sunday's sprint race was won by Brazilian Lucas Di Grassi, who is a test driver for Renault. This Belgian kid, Jerome Di Ambrosio, who last year won the Formula Masters, he was second. He's doing a pretty decent job. And Pantano was third. Now, what is happening here, Luca Filippi used to be teammate at ART with Grosjean.
Right.
And he left. I pretty much hate to say this on the Alonso program, that team is French, so they are favoring the French driver. And he was leading the sprint race, and this guy, Grosjean, tracked him down, passed him fair and square. And then, depends on who you listen to, they collided and, you know, Grosjean was taken out. So it's...
But this happens a lot at GP2 level.
All races, so it's not a big deal. Okay, but two rounds remaining in the series, Spa and Monza. Pantano leads Senna, but Senna is only a few points behind, so he could still win the championship.
And I'd be surprised if Pantano doesn't keep this up and wins the world championship. I mean...
GP2?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think he has like a 10 or 15 point lead, something like that. But, you know, I feel sorry for him. This guy is doing very good, has won a lot of races, very competitive, and nobody's talking to him from Formula One.
Well, that, and that's the sad part.
Yeah.
I mean, Grosjean, Senna, and nobody's talking about the leader in the GP2 championship. And the reason is he was in Formula One once before, didn't do too well, went back to GP2. He's now the oldest driver in GP2, as I believe is correct. So,
sure.
I don't know. And it's a sad state of affairs, and I don't think he will be able to. He might be able to get a test drive.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. Why would a top team take a 30-plus-year-old guy when they have a 21, 22-year-old very talented kid who is in his first year and is already as quick as Pantano?
Yeah.
So,
now,
but you still feel sorry for a guy. He must have worked very hard to be where he is and what he is.
Well, I still think he'll be able to earn money. I expect he'll go to maybe the American Open Wheel Series.
He's been here before, too.
Yes, and he is. And he's got some connections here. And, he, you know, you never know. He could be teammates to Rubens Barrichello one day over here.
Yeah. Okay, also in Valencia, Formula BMW Europe. First time the series raced on a street course, that would be the Formula BMW Europe. Race fund Thiago Geronimi from Brazil was the winner over Mexican and runaway championship leader Esteban Gutierrez, who is from Monterrey, Mexico. Marco Wittmann from Germania was third, and Gutierrez had taken the lead, was leading, but he made a small mistake and lost the win, but he still came second and increased.
And he's an outstanding driver.
Oh, that's very, very...
Very, very good talent.
Very
there.
Promising talent. He came here first two races in America last year from pole position, and he has won seven races. I mean, in the Formula BMW Europe this year, our man, David Tapia, is smiling. He has finished every race on the podium except one where he did not finish.
Exactly.
So I expect this kid to be in British Formula 3. Or some sort. I hope they don't jump like into GP2 right away.
I hope not either. But
go to British Formula 3 with a top team and really stamp his authority.
Yeah, and with that kind of talent, he'll become a household name in Mexico real quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And if that happens, he'll get the big sponsors.
And let me tell you right now, whether it's him or anybody, if he can put this kind of performance in British Formula 3 next year, F1 teams will be calling him for testing or at least to evaluate the kid. So it's really depends, you know. It's not about nationality or this and that. If you're quick and you can perform, you're going places.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Okay, in race two, Esteban Gutierrez led from start to finish for his seventh win of the season. His teammate Marco Wittmann was second, and Kevin Breas, I believe, of France was third. In the championship, check this out. Gutierrez is leading with 305 points. His teammate Wittmann, who was in his second year with the same team, in the same series, he has 238 points. So chances are Gutierrez is going to win the championship by over 100 points. Unbelievable. And that will really be very, very impressive.
Does he even need to race the last two races to win the series?
Probably not the last two races, but...
There are two more left, yeah. I'm assuming, Spa and Italy.
Yeah, but they do two races per weekend. Yeah. So I think he will finish out the season. Plus, you pay the team all this money.
I'm saying he doesn't even need to.
But you have sponsors and what have you. You need to be there, Stephen.
That's not what I'm saying.
Keep an open mind.
Yeah, as always, he's keeping a very open mind, looking at all the possibilities. Okay, what is happening here now, Spaniard Daniel Junquerdea and Adrian Tombe, who won the first two races of the season and is the son of Patrick Tombe, ex-Formula One driver.
And one of your new friends.
Yeah, sure. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I'll bring that up in a minute here.
Exactly.
They are joint third with 216 points each. And Patrick Tombe, you know, he ran into him at the Monterrey Historics, and, you know, I did an extensive interview with him in Barcelona. That was very kind of him to recognize me and come up and say hello to me. So I asked him, I said, hey, you know, if I come to Antibes, which is a very historical place for motor racing, in the golden era of motor racing, I said, can we do, you know, a cup of coffee or something? He said, no, we should do more. We should do lunch.
Yeah.
So I am planning to make a run to the Autosport show next year and either go through Viva la France or go to England first and drive, you know, come down to south of France.
Okay.
I would love to see Paul Ricca and the Mistral Strait. That's one of my favorites, man.
Exactly. Yeah. With a bottle of wine and a piece of fromage.
Yeah. And some pastis, my favorite.
You got to have some pastis, especially down south.
Yeah, I'll send you a postcard from Bandol.
Yeah, just make sure you hand out F1 Weekly business cards.
And you stay in Clark's brother's chateau.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
And also, you know, we haven't had an update on Kazim Mansour. How's he doing?
Kazim Mansour, thank you for bringing that up. He is, you know, this is his first year. He qualified both races in the top 10, and I believe he was in the top 10 in the second race. And he's very competitive in terms of times.
Yeah.
It's just he needs a little bit, you know, more and more experience, and then, you know.
Not only that, but he's up against some big talent.
Well, most of the drivers, at least most of the drivers who are ahead of him are in their second year.
Right.
You know, so there's no shortcut to experience, as I had mentioned to him.
Absolutely.
But he's in time-wise, he's staying within striking distance.
Good.
So I fully expect him to, now there are only, you know, two rounds remaining, but I fully expect him to fight for wins next season.
Excellent.
And I'm looking forward to it.
And, of course,
Naturalish.
F1 Weekly staff is completely behind him.
Yes, sir. Okay, and where do we go now? Okay, we go from Valencia to the land of Dracula, Bucharest.
That's one of my favorite places, Nasser.
Oh, I'm sure.
Exactly, that and Karachi.
Oh, yeah, oh, I'm sure. British F3 in the streets of... Hey, talking about Karachi, don't you have a tree here from Karachi?
As a matter of fact, we have the only tree from Karachi right behind Nasser, which we imported. And what Karachi does is they lend it to you because it's their only tree.
Yeah.
So we got to ship it back FedEx next weekend.
Thank
but
you.
But for you, they do anything over there.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Keep
and you, and you too.
Yes, of course.
Okay, British F3, Brendan Hartley was the winner in race one over Carlin teammates Oliver Turvey and Jaime Alguersuari. And keep an eye, folks, on these three names also. Finishing order was reversed in race two with Alguersuari, who could be the next muy macho hombre de España.
Really?
Winning, yeah. He is very good. Mm. Young and very good. And, you know, talent is talent. He was the winner in the race two over Turvey, and Hartley was third. And I'm convinced that at least one or two of them would make it to Formula One in the next 2 years, and third one maybe in the third year. These are very good drivers.
And I know you only pay attention to quality talent.
Well, I try to. But I've been wrong on my calls before. In the championship, Oliver Turvey from UK leads with 222 points. Jaime Alguersuari is second on 210 points. And Brendan Hartley from New Zealand is third with 192 points. Another young kid from North America, Canada, Robert Wickens. I'm very bullish on him also. And there are quite a few drivers who are racing here, but, you know, the thing is you may have all the talent in the world, but if you do not get the opportunity or the chance, then, you know, you may never. Jonathan Summerton, Carl Skerlong from Washington, Denny Murat from, again, Canada. These are all very, I think, good talent.
Absolutely.
Okay, and talking of talent, let's talk about Indy Racing League at Infineon Raceway.
Which you were at. You attended the race. You were excited. Oh, about the American Open Wheel Series.
Absolutely. Well, Sears Point is the place where I saw my very first race in 1985, Trans Am race, and local boy who later I did some work for, Mr. Willie T. Ribbs, he won the race from start to finish.
You know, I was at that race.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. I still have my paddock pass.
Wally Dellenbach was second, and Trans Am used to have a lot of good talent.
David Hobbs used to race. Oh, it was a great series.
Yeah, a lot of factory support in those days. Anyway, the you know, the track is now owned by people who own Lowe's Motor Speedway, Charlotte, and they have done a tremendous, tremendous job. You know, they had to because you know they brought in.
It's a good facility. It's updated. It's modern. I like going to Infineon Raceway.
Yeah, it's very nice. And long-awaited first win of the season for Ariel Castroneves ahead of Penske teammate Ryan Briscoe, who is from Australia, and of course, Castroneves is from Brazil. Another Brazilian, Tony Kanaan, was third, and I was able to do an interview with Tony Kanaan.
Now, that's, we all know, that's Rubinho's buddy.
Yeah, and talking of Rubinho, I told him, he had a big smile, I said, hey, in America there's a racehorse named after your friend Rubens Barrichello. He said, oh, I didn't know that, I'll tell him that.
There you have it.
Yeah.
We've got the word out to Rubinho that the four-legged Rubens Barrichello out back east in the Pennsylvania area, I believe.
Chicago, whatever, he's in demand.
Yeah.
But, like the two-legged one.
Let's hope that Rubens Barrichello gets in touch with Rubens Barrichello, and this could be a marriage made in heaven.
Absolutely. We should do a photo shoot, you know.
Huh,
and F1 Weekly could play a major role in
it. Not only that, but we could merge two forms of sport into one calendar.
Absolutely. There you go.
I mean, the idea is, this is entrepreneurship at its best.
Yeah. And it was very nice meeting Chris and his dad.
Tommy and Christopher, Auto Racer 5, on the forum, came to California. It was Auto Racer 5's first youthful visit to the San Francisco Bay Area. And, of course, they do all the cliche things, which I do occasionally, Golden Gate Bridge.
Hanging out in Mario Dominguez's pits. They watch the race from. They've become,
they're amigos there.
They're amigos with Mario
Apparently.
Dominguez.
Yeah. Was I invited? No. Nothing.
Me? No. So, but anyway, it was very nice, and I thank them for their time.
And I also thank them for having dinner with me on Friday night.
Exactly. And I apologize, Christopher and Tommy. I was on vacation up in the. At the F1 Weekly camp and fat farm.
And, you know, Cosmos is the name. He took my picture and posted on the forum and did not even say hello to me. So sad.
Yeah, come on, guys. If you're going to take a picture of an F1 Weekly staff member, there are rules and regulations.
Didn't that happen when you and Dave went to Infinity like 2 years ago?
The rules are simple. A quick lunch. We prefer hot dogs, but... You know, hamburger.
Nathan's hot dog for me because I will report to a higher authority.
And we all know that now.
Thank
sir.
You. Not just any hot dog.
But please say hello and don't worry about it. Okay, the producer is.
I don't bite. I don't bite.
You don't?
Go.
Keep up the good work, Mass.
Okay.
Okay, continue the globetrotting, please.
Globetrotting. Okay, no, we're staying here, local.
Okay,
Grand Am was also at the Infineon Raceway. Winners were Max Angelelli of Italy and Michael Valiente of Canada. And talking of young talent, let me tell you, I know a gentleman who's been involved in motorsports PR for 30-plus years, and mostly in American Indy Lights and Atlantics and sports car racing. And he said to me, Michael Valiente is the best driver he has ever worked with.
Well, apparently Valiente was doing an outstanding job. I was watching some of this race from the television that they had provided me at the Fat Farm. And they were all over Michael Valiente. Just outstanding stuff.
That's why, you know, it is so important. Once you get a good break, you have to make the most of it.
If you don't, it's over, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking, you know, if you're as talented where you can B-slap Michael Schumacher, which Montoya was, look how these people approached their career in Formula One.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Michael Valiente and Max Angelelli of Italy won the race in the Pontiac Dallara over the Pontiac Riley of California kids, John Fogarty, who was from Northern California, Palo Alto, and Alex Gurney, Bambino of our man from Southland, Mr. Dan Gurney. American Le Mans Series from Mossport in Canada, and I'm sure you'll be happy to hear this. You probably know this already, your beloved Peugeot 908. They were at Sebring, but they're coming to the Petit Le Mans also in Road Atlanta. Are you
They going? Are coming in October.
Road Atlanta.
Are Road you Atlanta, going? Peugeot, fighting again
the
against
line.
Audi. And we will.
Whatever.
Prevail.
So are you going to go there?
No, I'm on a budget. F1 Weekly's paychecks have become much smaller lately due to the cost of gas and the economy in general. And I really don't want to get into the politics of the nation as it is today. But the zeros are worth much less now.
Yeah. And the dollar zeros are even worth less than the euro.
Exactly. And I've been issuing the bonus checks in euros because NAS won't even take a buck. So that's what's going on there.
Okay, let me mention.
But I'm going to watch it on television because it's going to be exciting. I mean, Peugeot is still, I mean, it's not a well-known brand in this country, but still, it's going to be exciting. It's a beautiful car. Le Mans was exciting to watch, and it's going to be a replay, a miniature, as they call it, Le Petit Le Mans.
Yeah, the car is very beautiful, and the Le Mans race was great. Okay, let me at least mention who won the race. It was the Audi 1-2 German pairing of Lucas Lohr and Marco Werner winning over the Italian combo of Emmanuel Pirro and Dindo Capello. David Brabham from Australia, who is the bambino of Sir Jack Brabham, he was third for Acura, and his teammate is Scott Sharp from Connecticut.
And let's not forget that BMW has allowed Christian Kleen to drive for Peugeot.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. And also, you know, this teenager is replacing Tony the Tiger. This young 19-year-old.
Tony Stewart.
Yeah, Joey Logano.
Yes, another young talent,
19 years old.
Holy
mackerel. He will be replacing Tony Stewart at Joe Gibbs Racing, and a teenager in a Toyota will be making big splash next year in NASCAR Nation.
In America.
That'll be interesting.
That's really exciting. Yeah. The hot dog sales, I'm sure, will go sky high.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So another...
Pabst Blue Ribbon is already putting a new factory in Pittsburgh.
News for the listeners. New PBR factory in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, NAS, keep up the good work. Another outstanding motorsport... The tea is just parching my mouth. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Steve, hang on. The globe has stopped. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the wrap-up.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, before we go into the wrap-up, we've got a quick introduction to an interview that is a man that's got so much motorsports history. Another great interview. I mean, every one of these interviews, I mean, we just had Mario Andretti, and this is another great motorsports legend. NAS introduced the legend.
Well, again, just like Mario Andretti, name is the introduction.
Exactly.
AJ Foyt.
What can you say?
Exactly. First of all, you know, I would like to thank his assistant, Anne Fornoro, for helping me do this interview. She was kind enough to share her experiences with me regarding various drivers who have driven for AJ Foyt over the years. And they range from young American talent, guy I admired very much, Robbie Gordon and Kenny Bragg, to Eddie Cheever. Kenny Bragg also won the Indy 500 for AJ Foyt, ironically, when Robbie Gordon ran out of petrol. AJ, as we all know, is not only a racing legend, but an American sports icon. If you know anything about this man, you will know, understand, and appreciate why they call him Texas Tough. And obviously a huge, huge name worldwide, not just here in the U.S. First man to win Indy 500 four times, and I asked him which one was the sweetest for him, and it's interesting what his answer was. Other major achievements for AJ Foyt include victories at Daytona 500, and Le Mans 24-hour race in 1967. And, of course, his teammate then in a Ford GT was Dan Gurney. So I asked him, hey, you're Texas Tough, he's California Cool. How was the chemistry between the two? And I hope our listeners enjoyed this brief conversation. And my thanks again to Ann for helping me make this thing happen.
And another outstanding job, NAS. Another zero on the way.
Great.
Okay, now let's go into the wrap-up real quickly. Steven has got a forum update from our friend Peter, also known as Yay!
This week's snippets from the F1 Weekly Forum. The forum has been busier than ever, especially over the weekend where the Valencia race was proclaimed processional by all. The forum now boasts 323 members. As I type, 29 have been active in the previous 24 hours. The drivers and teams Hurt and Heal threads need more votes. Miguel asks you to please go there and vote. Balls Out in SoCal turned out to be real, and our newest poster for the week is Darwin, BC. Cosmos spotted an F1 Weekly t-shirt at the IRL race at Infineon. Turns out to be Otter Racer 5's dad. Seems that everyone wants an F1 Weekly tee. The prediction competition for Valencia was won by Sihee Sin, who now takes the overall points lead. And finally, as there were no birthdays this week, so we say congratulations on the 300th podcast. Keep up the good work. And that's all for this week. Keep up the good posting. And also to our members on the forum, this is we're doing a simulcast, I guess you could say. We'd like you to get onto the forum and vote and let us know what you think about the video portion of this podcast.
There you have it. I know it's going to be a lot of laughs for you guys, but this is serious business over here. A lot of work. And real quickly, I want to mention that we're all available for dates if you find us attractive.
With females!
Exactly.
Though we have been known to take a free lunch.
Exactly. So anyway, thanks for the forum update. And now I want to mention calendars and the 2008 calendar. I'm standing up now.
Sit down. Relax.
And I'm going to sit down. Miguel, here's your calendar. We're all signing the calendar. And I want to do it for the people, and especially for the people of Portugal.
Portugalistan, as he calls it.
Exactly. Country. Thank you very much. So thanks for all your support, Miguel. Really appreciate it. We love you very much, and keep listening to the podcast. Here I go. I am signing.
I'm a witness. That's an actual signature.
Hey, Ness, why don't you tell us about the 2009 calendar?
Well, the 2009 calendar, Clark Rogers, you should be the first one to buy that one, because on the cover is Le Professeur, Mr. Alain Prost, in a Renault, and of all the places at Monaco. And as you know, the theme is Powered by Turbo, Motorsports Memories Powered by Turbo, to celebrate the great race at Dijon where they scored their first win. But even more important was what's going on behind, in the words of Mr. Murray Walker.
He's off! He's back again! It's incredible!
Thank you. We have some great photographs. You know, Nigel Mansell in a Lotus. Of course, Ayrton Senna in a Tolman, with which he almost won the Monaco Grand Prix. A beautiful picture of flame shooting out of Nelson Piquet's Brabham BMW. And he was the first driver to become world champion in a turbo-powered car.
All you have to say is it's a Nasser Hamid Saison 73 sold at F1Weekly.com calendar. That means quality, Nasser. Quality, quality, quality.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, come on. 2008.
You still would have to buy the first copy.
Is this the best calendar you ever saw? Yes, it is. And of course,
and also the captions will be in English, German, and Francais.
Of course. And I want to mention, if you spill Chablis on your calendar, a replacement will be available. That's the policy here. Not Cabernet, but Chablis.
Good.
Okay, so there you have it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Real quickly, I want to mention our MySpace site. You can visit us at myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise across the remote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. And I want to thank all the listeners that has made 300 possible, because you could have just mocked us, laughed at us, and thought this was junk. But in reality, we've enjoyed making this program, and 300 came along pretty quickly. Nas, you've got to have a couple of good favorite episodes, favorite interviews. What do you think? How do you think this is coming along?
Well, I'm very happy, very pleased to be part of this. And most of all, I would like to thank all the listeners who have sent emails to us or made postings on the forum. Not just those who are, you know, we have like Miguel and Elvin in Holland and a lot of people in South America, Australia, who always send us, you know, good comments. But I'm also very thankful to all the people who were not happy with what we said or were kind of pissed off at us.
Absolutely, made us
and
better.
Made us better. And we try to listen. We understand we cannot please everybody all the time, but we are very, very thankful. And this is not a political comment. I mean, Clark and I discuss, you know, we have to listen to people who are saying things that we may not like to hear. Obviously, they are taking their time to write to us. so we can better the program. And I'm very pleased and I look forward to it. Coming here every week is one of the highlights of my life. There's
of
no
course.
Question about it. I mean, you know.
Not only that, but the facilities, our break room, the free tea. Yeah, we love every minute of it, Nass.
All the charm of the host.
Exactly. Now let me go to the best co-host in the business, really. Steve, what do you have to say about the program? We have 300. We've had some pretty goofy ones. Number 59 is my favorite, of course. But your thoughts on this real quickly?
I'm actually amazed that we've made it to 300.
You know, especially all that infighting.
Well, there were many times where it's just you kind of like, well, why do I keep coming back? And every time I sit down and do it, it turns out to be fun.
It is fun.
You know, even when I'm thinking, oh, God, I want to stay late again, right? But then once I get into it, yeah, woo, cool, all right, yeah, woo, that's a fun. No, and then looking back, you know, one of my favorites was, I think it was number 3. When you ended up, I left early and you called me at home and we did the show over the phone.
Oh, speakerphone.
That was fun. Number 1 is always a hoot. Especially after doing one like this where you go back and you look, God, were we really that green? But outside of that, it's just been fun, you know, going to races. You know, I wish we could get to more races because I think that would make things even that much more interesting and fun for our listeners.
Well, once we get those sponsors on board, we'll be there. But
sponsors, info at fnweekly.com.
Absolutely. And for me, it's the listeners. When I get those emails, when I go to the forum and I get the feedback and I feel the love, I appreciate it and gives me more energy to continue on and continue with the shows.
And thanks to the man behind the camera, the ever-smiling senior David Tapia.
David Tapia has done an outstanding job in keeping this together, but I want to thank Steve Faub for putting up with me. I want to thank Nasser Hamid for putting up with me. I want to thank Toby for doing a great job for lots of zeros. So a lot of people volunteer their time. There is no profit here, guys. I mean, we have to pay Toby for the server every once in a while, but none of us do this for any money. I mean, it's minuscule at best. Please, one last message. Please, click on the Yahoo ads.
You know you want to.
There you have it. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Ciao. Okay, I'm here with AJ Foyt, legend of legends. Sir, how are you today, and how excited are you about the reunification of IndyCar racing?
Well, you know, I've always loved IndyCar racing better than any type of racing I ever did. Of course, I love the sprint cars and the midgets, too, but it's just part of my life.
Clint Bronner once described you as a tough guy who was waking up on a hot racing day when half the drivers were falling apart. What made you so tough?
Well, I always kept myself in pretty good shape until I quit. Now I've gotten old and fat. But before then, you know, I worked out, and I stayed in pretty good shape. I wasn't a drinker or a smoker or nothing like that.
In your book, you talk about, and this is my favorite part in your book, the first time you were leading the Indy 500, you could only think about the announcer. I believe Sid Collins was the name, saying leading the Indy 500 is A.J. Foyt of Houston, Texas. Can you share your thoughts with us, please, of what that meant to you?
Well, it meant everything in the world to me. My dream was just someday hoping to qualify for the Indy 500, much less be able to lead it, much less be able to win it. And that's just every race driver's dream, I think.
Okay. You were the first man to win Indy 500 four times. Which one gave you the most satisfaction?
Well, I'd have to say one of the most satisfaction I had at Indy was the first time I ever qualified for the race and then be fortunate enough to win it the first time and actually be the first man to win it four times. You know, it's just hard to put them. They was all just great, great victories, and everybody in the world knows what the Indy 500 is, so they was all great victories.
You and Dan Gurney, two great American legends and very different personalities, won the Le Mans 24-hour race. How important is that victory in your long list of accomplishments?
Well, you know, for me, Dan Gurney's a great road racer, and for him to have me as a teammate, and for us to lead Le Mans, 23 and a half hours, and I think we still hold the miles covered for 24 hours more than anybody yet, and we set that record in 1967, and Dan Gurney's been a great friend of mine, and he's a great race driver, so it was a deal that Ford Motor Company teamed us up, and was a very successful team.
Did you enjoy racing an endurance race in Europe?
I really did, because, you know, we're the only American team to ever win it, so, you know, it's a pretty big ego.
Your reputation has always been Texas tough, and Dan is kind of like California cool. How did you guys get along?
We got along great. We never had a crossword that I know of. I still respect Dan. I think he respects me, and we've been friends for many, many years, and Dan's just a good friend of mine.
You race against some great racing drivers, the Andretti's, the Unser's, and Rutherford and John Cock. Let me ask you a question. If you were a team owner in the era you were racing and all the racing drivers you race against were available, who would you pick as your two drivers?
That would be hard to say because at the time I was there and even before me and after me, there's been so many great drivers, it would have been hard to sit there and say which two you'd want on your team. I know Pernelli Jones was a great race driver, and so was Jim Herdebees. And I know Pernelli, the year that he put, I think he had Mario, I think, and Joe Leonard and all that. So it would really be hard for me to just say which two I'd rather have.
Looking back on your great career, what are some of the great moments that you cherish most? It doesn't have to be a victory. Any particular races that stand out?
Well, one of the great moments of my racing career was at Kansas City when I won the first midget race, you know, with AAA. So I'd have to say that was one of the great moments in the movements of A.J. Foyt.
You know, in the era you raced, the 50s, 60s, racing was so dangerous and a lot of drivers got killed. Was there, especially after you got your first Indy 500 win, did you ever think of quitting the sport because you've had the success and the dreams you had because of the dangers involved?
Well, not really. Normally, a lot of people, after they won Indy, the next couple of races, they either got killed or hurt rare bad, and I never let it enter my mind. I always felt like if the good Lord wanted me to be here, he'd keep me, and if he didn't, he'd take me. And that's the way I always looked at life. You never know. When you're not a permanent fixture, you never know when he's going to come get you. And that's the way I've always lived.
What's a day like in the life of A.J. Foyt these days in Houston?
Well, every day I get up and look down to grass, I'm very happy because a lot of my friends are looking up at the grass. So right now, every day you get out of bed and you're still able to move around, it makes you feel how lucky you are.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
I'm sorry?
A message for our listeners. We have a worldwide audience.
Well, all I can say, as long as you're healthy, you don't realize how lucky you are until you're real sick or hurt like I have been. So any day you can get up and move and not have too many aches and pains, feel very, very lucky.
Thank you very much.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.